Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello!
Hey, Shireeni.
Hi, this is... I don't hate, but when you say my name, I want to say my name, and then the intro is this.
This is every intro we do.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous. As you can tell by the title, we have the one and only Jaquis Neal with us on the pod today.
Yes, we do.
It's a really lovely conversation. We talk about his roots in Chicago, growing up with his mom, and moving to LA and acting, podcasting, comedy, all of it. It's a great conversation.
And being a dramateur. That's not a real word, is it? All right, stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi, Shireeni.
Hi, Anna. How are you? I mean, I know how you are. You just got back from the eye doctor.
From the eye doctor. Bad news, I'm blind.
Oh, rip.
Just joking. I shouldn't make that joke. There's real blind people out there.
You're wearing contacts today. I haven't seen you without glasses in a very long time.
Yeah, which... What did I do with my glasses? I'm sorry. I am actually wondering what I do with my glasses. Hold on one second.
Gotcha.
Well... That velvety laugh, the chuckle that someone may have heard in the background, is our guest for today.
Ooh.
Let's just get it going. Anna's coming back.
Okay.
I just told the listeners that our guest has a velvety chuckle. And I was going to introduce him because it's too late.
Please introduce him. I found my glasses.
It's Jaquis Neal, everybody.
Yeah.
It's a long
up?
Time.
Long, yes.
long time coming.
Long time.
You're one of the podcasts, like, you're part of the family. You know what I mean? Like, you should have been on a long time ago.
Yeah. And
Shireen thought
you
had...
did remind me. Yeah,
Shireen was like, we've had Jaquis on. And I'm like, no, dude, we had to cancel and then fucking never rescheduled because we're idiots. And then
listen, I get
like,
it.
Are you
I get
sure?
it. It's yeah, hard. I'm sure there's like 3 or 4 people out there who were supposed to be on Culture Kings at some point within the past 2 years and have not yet. So I get it.
Yeah,
it's very easy to forget.
Thank you for accepting our invitation despite our shortcomings.
Yes, I'm very excited to have a velvety chuckle.
Velvety chuckle.
That's
I
the
mean,
only
you
reason
have
I do
a great
podcasts.
Voice.
Thank you.
I think I told you that when I was on Culture Kings the first time, but you have a great voice. And if I didn't tell you that, I probably thought that.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you have a voice for podcasting and a face for TV.
Oh,
I can't say you have a face for podcasting because that would be
okay. That would be
an insult and not true. And not
okay.
True.
Okay, I'll take the face for TV. I'll give my voice if I can keep my face for TV.
Oh wow,
you have to choose one.
I do. Eventually, I feel like it's gonna be a choice at some point. And if the gods ever bring that choice to me, I'm just letting them know now. I choose face.
Yeah, wow. You must. You'd be like, no, I can't have this TV career interfere with my podcast career.
Yeah,
you know, Little Mermaid makes a lot of sense now to me.
You say what? I'm the Little Mermaid?
Yeah, because she gave up her voice for a dude, but in your case, for fame.
That's tough.
Yeah, and listen, she got a husband out of it, and she got, you know, she's living in a castle now, and she can go back and forth between the water and land.
She's got a
mate. She's living a life. She's living a life.
Yeah.
Can she really? She can go back?
I mean, she can go for a swim,
I think so,
probably.
Right? Yeah, I would assume. They don't really cover that in the movie, but
yeah, you're right.
I would assume that she can't, like, she's not banned from the sea.
Yeah.
That's true. Her whole family's down there.
Yeah, I'm sure she could just, like, once
like
she
snorkel?
Gets in the water.
She could probably snorkel or something, right?
I don't know. See, I'm assuming that we're off to a great start. This is what we're going to talk about. I'm assuming that, like, there is some type of ocean magic where... Like, if she dips a toe in the water, her legs become mermaid fins again. And then she can, you know, and then when she comes up, then they turn back into legs.
I mean, that is a very generous future for her. You know, like she gets it all. There's no loss. There's no sacrifice.
There's no loss.
I mean, that is a perfect world. The perfect world shouldn't have a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a riveting introduction. I'm actually really happy about it.
That could have been. That was. I remember that being so tragic when I was a kid. Of like Ursula being like, pick one, your voice or your legs. And she chose legs. It's like, what?
My dad hated Little Mermaid. Do you want to know why? Because she was disobedient to her father. He hated that movie.
Could your dad
so
be more
much
on brand?
It was. I remember him being so, like, his favorite movie was obviously The Lion King, because a cartoon movie rather, because the father son relationship was so strong. Like the father was like the dude.
The father died.
Yeah, but it was like
because the kid didn't listen.
Well, there you go. That's a great lesson. Hey, I will die if you don't listen to me. So
okay, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it was.
Really,
okay. My dad loved Lion King as well too, but I think he just likes jungle animals, or like he likes like. That's not the jungle. Like, what is it called? The
Sahara?
Sahara.
Desert animals. Yeah.
He likes lions and tigers and shit. He's very into that.
I mean, yeah, The Lion King was definitely a fan favorite in my house, too.
It was a fan favorite in mine, too. I think everybody liked The Lion King.
I still haven't seen a single one of the live action ones, though. Like, a single movie of them.
Yeah. Oh, none of them? Not even like Aladdin?
I still haven't seen Aladdin. Maybe out of all of them, I want to see Aladdin the most.
I think Aladdin was good. Aladdin was good.
Lion
King was bad.
Yeah, I don't remember that one being good. I don't recall if Jungle Book was good or not. I haven't seen it in a while.
Jungle Book was good. It's just Jungle Book in general is kind of boring to me.
Yeah. Right,
so, like, you know, it was a good adaptation. Probably one of the best. It's just not that much of a riveting story.
There's no romance. Yeah, there's nothing really to it.
Our grandparents' movie. Like, that movie came out in, like, what, the 50s? That's for our grandparents and shit.
Yeah.
I want to see a live-action Pinocchio, because that shit's dark.
Have they made something like that? Maybe not. Maybe I'm misremembering, but that would be cool. That would be cool.
I feel like they have made some version of it, but it wasn't Disney. It wasn't like a live
version
some of the Disney
thing.
Yeah, it was like based off the book, probably.
Yeah. So it probably was even darker, because that shit's crazy.
It's just dark, yeah.
But okay, let's stop talking about Disney. At the end of the podcast, we revealed that you're like a Disney representative.
I am. No. Yes.
Anyways, let's talk about you, Jaquise. Let's rewind. Mm. Let's talk about where you were born and where you grew up.
So yeah, most people who know me know that I'm very proud of my Chicago lineage, born and raised in Chicago, south side of Chicago. Which is, if you ever hear the phrase, keep it 100, a lot of people think it's like, yo, keep it 100%. But it really stems from keep it 100, like the Wild Wild Hundreds, which was in Chicago, which is always known for just like, yo, you gonna get it how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's buck wild here, but you know, it is what it is type thing. And you keep it 100. And I grew up in those hundreds. Yeah. So
I did not know that.
That's where the phrase comes from. Like, I remember that phrase when I was a kid, before it became mainstream.
Wow.
Because I grew up and was considered the Wild Wild Hundreds. So, yeah, you know, Chicago, South Side. And then I stayed in Chicago up until I was like 26, until I moved out to L.A. So these are the only two places I've ever lived, is Chicago and L.A., the two big cities.
And why did you decide to move?
Entertainment, acting, get fame and fortune.
Yeah. Trading your voice for legs.
trading my voice for legs. You know, my choice was have a voice in Chicago or have legs in L.A.
Well, okay,
and I chose legs.
You knew as a kid that you wanted to go into some type of entertainment then.
I think like if I, as an adult, go back on my childhood, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was always in like talent shows or the school, not the school play, but like. If there was a reading or something like that, I would always be picked to be the one who would be the reader in like kindergarten or first grade because I had a high reading level and I was comfortable in front of people and all that good stuff. I also was the class clown and I was on the honor roll up until like seventh grade. And then they also graded your conduct. And my conduct would continuously be like B-. Because mostly like the teachers was like, you deserve a grade lower than this, but we can't let conduct be the reason you drop off the honor roll. Because I wasn't that bad. I just was like a class clown, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I would do shit at the crib, you know, always. I would pretend like I was, I always say Mark Summers, if you remember the game show Double Dare.
Yes.
Is the person who made, yes, classic. He's the guy that made me want to be in entertainment because I would always mimic him. I would always like have a mic. I would just be like, man, I want to do that. I want to host. I want to entertain and all that good stuff. But I didn't know that that's what I wanted to do as a kid until high school. I was making music for a little bit. I was rapping. I was signed to a Chicago label.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then fell out of that. I mean, I've told the story many times on Culture Kings. I actually got arrested for selling weed.
Okay.
And I got out of the music scene. And my guidance counselor at the time, going into junior year, was just like, all right, well, what do you want to do? It's time to start thinking about college. Your grades are not great because you don't take school seriously. It's time to take it serious and actually think about what you want to do. And I was just like, well, I guess I like entertaining people, making people laugh, and I'm comfortable in front of people. And he was like, all right, cool. Let's put you in theater arts class. And he did. And like that was it. And then in the midst of that arrest and staying at the crib and not hanging out with my friends anymore, I was like, I'm bored. So I just decided to audition for the school play, which was Oliver Twist.
Ooh.
And haven't stopped acting since.
Nice. Oliver Twist. Is there a photo from that?
There's of me and Oliver Twist?
Yeah.
There is. I have one photo. It's me with braids. Yes. They hated me. The theater department hated me.
I remember this.
Loved me by senior year.
Yeah.
But when I came in junior year, they was like, who is this nigga coming in here? Like, I had like straight back braids, like two baggy pants, throwback jerseys, and I'm just coming in like, ha ha, Oliver Twist, baby. and if anybody is in theater, they know. You know, the theater department is a very close-knit group, and it is generally full of people who started, like, freshman year on. So because of that, they feel like things are owed to them, mm-hmm. and it's very much a, you know, a little family atmosphere, but mm-hmm. also just, like, an inner circle. So this outsider comes in and is booking lead roles and, like, shit like that. I even think a month after being in a play, decided I was going to run for treasurer. And people were just like, who the fuck is this person? Like, who the fuck do you think you are, dude? Yeah. Like, people were so mad, especially the black dudes. The black dudes were mad because, you know, like many black people know in entertainment, there's not many spots for us. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, when you're a lower classman and the black upperclassmen are getting the roles, by the time you become an upperclassman, you're like, ha, those roles are mine. And then here come me. And I, you know, not to toot my own horn, but according to all the people making decisions, I was more talented than yeah. they were. And I'm getting all the... So they hated me at first, but mm-hmm. they, you know, we all loved it. It was all love at the end. But yeah, there's a picture of me with my Iverson, or a white kid wearing my Iverson jersey, and me and my like 19 or my 1800s British Gab.
Yes.
With a ponytail.
Yes, I remember this. I've seen this photo many a time.
Yeah. Oh, I think I showed it on like the Daily Zeitgeist or something,
right? Yeah,
we've
had that. And I think we've just used it before for like social stuff. So I always remember that.
And it has it framed in her house.
I have it framed in my house. It's very important to me.
That's fair. Listen, I get it. It's important to me too. I have it framed too.
Nice. So, okay. So what did your mom do while you were going through all this? What did she do? Tell us a little about your parents. Like, are you an only child?
Yeah, so I'm my mom's only child. Okay. I have stepbrothers now, mm-hmm. but that didn't happen until I was like 14, 15 okay. years old. I have a weird family dynamic. I don't know my father. Mm-hmm. My mom had me when she was 16.
Okay.
So I grew up in a house with my entire family, my mom, my two aunts, and my grandparents. And my aunt, my youngest aunt, we were more or less raised like brother and sister because we were so close in age.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So like she's not like an authority figure like most aunties are, mm-hmm. especially when you're a kid.
Yeah.
So it was never like that. And I had a lot of cousins who even was like sisters and shit to me because we were always, it was a really connected, extended family. But yeah, so my mom was young when she had me. So, you know, I often think about this. I'm 34 now. And by the time my mom was my age, she had an 18-year-old kid.
Wow.
I was in college at this point. you know, like,
wild.
It is. It's wild, you know. So she always, you know, mom was a hard worker, man. Yeah. She was a hard worker, but she also, you know, sacrificed a lot because she had a kid to raise. So, you know, she's like 5 credits away from getting her bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yes.
Pretty soon, I'm going to try to like help her pay for to get the rest of her degree. But yeah, so she's always just had jobs and like jobs to make ends meet. And some better than others.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's just been a hustler. She's been a hustler. She's been hardworking. She's been there. She's been present. By all accounts, I should be a statistic. Mm-hmm. You know, South Side of Chicago, black kid with a single mother who had me at 16. Like, I should be very much a statistic. Mm-hmm. But instead, I'm like the first one in my family to graduate college. And, all you know, like, I you know, she made sure that that was going to be furthest from the case.
Right.
So, you know, that's she's incredible. Dope. She's a great person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like you were raised in a really beautiful family dynamic.
Well,
I mean, like, not, I mean, beautiful is like, it may be in retrospect, but like,
yeah.
But did constantly being surrounded by family, like extended or otherwise, did that make you value family a lot? Or did you find yourself like doing the opposite sometimes in like your rebellious years?
I don't like what some people would consider having a close family. I don't necessarily consider our family that close, to be honest with you.
Interesting.
I don't consider us disconnected or not close. Like we're always there for each other. We can pick up the phone. But like, for instance, my fiance, she talks to her mom every day. Mm-hmm. I would be pissed if my mom tried to talk to me every day. like, leave me the fuck alone. Like, leave me alone. Go do something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have time to talk to you every day. So, like, you know, we're close. We love each other and things like that. But we're not like that. And I can be very reserved or very closed off sometimes as far as, you know, just talking about things all the time. So, you know, we're very, we talk and we love each other and yada, yada, yada. But we're not that, like, you know, we got to see each other once a month, every month. And like, we're not that type of family. And we never have been. And a big part of that is, you know, even though I did grow up in a nice, cool family, I also grew up in a religious black family. And my grandmother was very religious. And religious in all the ways that we and our circle would be like, whew. That's some crazy shit, like speaking in tongues and God speaking through you and like the controlling aspect of the church and things like that. And I love my grandmother and I, you know, she is a great source of spiritual guidance for me. But I think like as we all grew up and got out of that house, the push away was a push away from that. Mm-hmm. And as we're getting older, we're starting to like come back together, but like a fracture. Like my mom is a lesbian or bisexual, which, you know, in the church is a no-no. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it was, there's been fractured years within our family dynamic as well.
Right. When did she come out?
She came out to me like freshman year of high school. It was very, very early. Freshman year of high school, yeah. But I found out probably a few months before she told me, because I walked in on her. I don't think she still knows this to this day, but you know, I was like 13 years old and you know, I felt like I was 5. It's like, what's that noise coming from my mama's room? Uh-huh. I thought she was hurt, but then I walked in and I'm mad thinking about it right now. I walked in on her and her eventual partner and I was like, so that's how I found out. And you know, nothing about the actual like sexuality of it. Well, now as an adult, nothing about it then. But at 13, growing up in a black religious family, one, I was like, what the fuck for that? And two, I don't want to walk in on my mom fucking.
Yeah.
Especially as a teenager who also is trying to fuck girls too. Like I don't wanna you That's know, amazing. Like I, you know, so it was a very scarring moment for me. But but yeah, you know, when she came out, I was not in the same place that I was now, especially. Uh-huh. I think most of us know, most people of color know that, you know, growing up, a lot of people of color come from homophobic backgrounds.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a religious background.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And so I very much had that growing up, especially at that age. But I think that stopped for me around senior year of high school when I was dating a person. And they were also religious. And they found out my mom was a lesbian and like almost made us break up.
Holy
and
shit.
And had me like questioning like, should I accept my mom and blah, blah, blah. Oh. And then they hit me like a bunch of stuff hit me like, one, that's my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's who she is. Three, like she had a gay best friend. Like my girlfriend who, and it was like, well, I don't agree with it, but I'm cool with Brandon and I'm cool with your mom. And I was like, that's some hypocritical shit.
Right.
And four, I was just like, you know, you come from a religious family and you're a religious girl. You be in church and praising God and all that stuff. And then we get home and we have sex. Like you're full of shit.
Yeah.
You're like full of shit. So it was like, it made me really start to question the homophobia rooted in religion. A lot, which immediately made me question homophobia just in Black culture and just in general.
Yeah.
As well. And I think once that happened, me and my mom's relationship definitely got a lot closer and stronger as well.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Let's take a quick ad break and we'll get right back. Talk so much more about your life.
Yes.
It's so fascinating and
oh.
I can't wait to learn more. We'll be right back.
All right.
We're back with your keys.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious. So like your mom has this kind of coming out period in her life, even if it's just to you, like was she, how was that for her with your like grandmother and just like in the family? Like, did she just feel like she had to live this like secret life in the process?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, during that reckoning that I was telling you about where mm-hmm. I started to realize, like, you know, this is fucked up. Another part of that was when my mom came out to me
mm-hmm.
and then my mom came out to my grandma, which was obviously going to be very hard.
Yeah.
Because around that same time is when my mom's partner was going to move in with us and her kids. So, you know, at that point, you kind of have to come out, right? And my grandmother didn't talk to my mom for like a year.
Wow. And she didn't live with you guys?
She didn't live with us at that okay. point. No, at that point we were on our own. We got the house that I grew up in. We got evicted from that house when I was 11.
Okay.
So at that point that forced all of us to kind of separate. So me and my mom were living on our own. And she didn't speak to her for a year after that. And, you know, at that age, you know, listen, at that age, I was 14. I was 14 around then. So you don't really understand shit, you know?
Yeah.
For any 14-year-old who's listening to this, I know you think you know it all and you got a grasp on the world. You don't know shit. Yeah. You don't know shit. Yeah. For any early 20-year-old listening to that, you don't know shit either.
Yeah. I mean, like, even 30s, you know, 40s, I don't I was know gonna shit say, either.
Even 30s, I don't know shit either. Like, when I'm 40 and I just talk to 30-year-olds, like, you don't know shit, dude. Yeah. You don't know shit, 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
But you really don't know shit when you're 14.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, there's no ambiguity in the shit that you don't know. So, you know, I didn't really get it, but as I was looking back at that time frame when I was around 18 on my way to college, I was like, that's fucked up. Like, why, what makes you hate something so bad that you don't talk to your daughter for a year?
Yeah.
You know, like it makes no sense. It made no sense to me. Mm-hmm. So it was hard for her. It was hard for her. And, you know, once she came out and that period was over, she probably didn't have to live in secret much anymore and could live her life. I mean, the really good thing about this is a lot of this, while it is tragic and I'm giving my age, like I was 14 and this mm-hmm. and that and this and that. Again, we can't forget that my mom had me when she was 16.
Right.
So like all of this, while it's hard, and she was much older as far as like maturity and the world forced her to be older than she needed to be, just from one, being a woman, two, being a Black woman, mm-hmm. and having a kid, she was still 30.
Right.
Like, so, like, you know, it's still a very, she was still 30, and this is 2000.
Right.
So yeah. That's still a very young age to come out and
yeah, it's formative, that, very formative yeah. years. Mm-hmm.
Especially in that time, and that 20 years ago. So, you know, it's not as tragic as somebody coming out at 50. 2020, right. You know, can finally come out, you know. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, she's had a good chunk of her adulthood where she doesn't or had to have felt like she has to live her life in secret, which is,
yeah,
which is a good thing.
That's good.
Yeah. That is a 30, man. And to think you have this child who's basically a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot.
I was 14 when she was 30.
Wild.
It's me, as if me or you, Anna, having a 14-year-old right now, because we're both 30. But that's not... I don't know if I can handle that. I kill all my pets. Like, or not pets. Oh my God, I don't have any pets. I kill all my plants.
I was going to say, damn, you just going to admit that on the pod?
No, like I kill all my pets. I don't have any pets. I kill all my plants.
Them pets don't make it. These pets don't. I've had five cats and they all died.
The last episode we had, I did say, like, I want to get a cat. So maybe that's foreshadowing that I shouldn't do that.
Get that cat.
No.
Yeah, get a cat.
You should get it.
But don't kill it.
But okay. Your mom sounds like a lovely person, and I'm really glad that...
Yeah, she's dope. She lives in California now, so... You know,
oh, she is? She moved out here?
She moved out here. I was very happy for her.
Nice.
She lived in Chicago her whole life, and Chicago's home, but she finally got to do... I mean, yes, she wanted to live near me as well, but she finally got to do something major that was for herself.
Yeah.
Which was really cool, and I'm happy for her.
Where did she go in California?
She lives in the Dale of Glen.
Oh, so she lives right in LA.
She's in LA.
Oh, yeah, she lives in LA. Yeah, she's 10 minutes away. She's 10 minutes away from the crib.
That's actually really lovely.
I appreciating our parents as we get older is, like, I feel like something that happens. And I'm glad that you guys are close, especially now that you have a fiance and potentially whatever that means for you two. But let's get to that in a second. I do want to talk about how you proposed.
Okay. All right.
I'm realizing it's more common than ever for people who live in LA to have their parents move here because it's like such a nice climate. Like, you're not the mm-hmm. first person whose parents were like from the East Coast or Midwest that were like, fuck it, I'll follow you. It sounds nice out there and I'm retired or whatever. I'm ready to make a move. It's
My fiance's mom literally just moved out here 5 days ago.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
So, like, everybody's fucking moving out here.
Yeah.
It's nice.
I mean, if they can afford it, more power to them.
But they're making it happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about when you moved here. You were 26, you said. What did you get into when you moved here? Like, you eventually found your way into podcasting and, like, I'm sure you did some, like, classes and stuff. But, like, what was your first things that you got into?
You know, when I left Chicago, I didn't really need to leave because things were going well. Like, Chicago has a very vibrant theater scene. That's only second to Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And I was very much in it. I was a professional actor. I was making money acting, doing theater.
That's incredible. For as a 26-year-old to say that, that's a big deal.
Yeah. And at some point I would love to go back to Chicago and grind my teeth again in the theater world out there. Cause I miss it. Very much. But when I moved out here, I expected to hit the ground running. Just like, you know, because I'm working out there. I'm booking commercials out there. Around the same time is when all the Chicago shows and more shows have started to come to Chicago. So, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to hit the ground running when I go to LA. It's time. And that first year was tough. For a lot of reasons. One, LA... it's a very unsocial city. It's very hard to be social here because for a few reasons that I've ascertained. One is just it's too spread out.
Right.
One, you know, being social here is until you really find a really tight-knit circle is like you have to make a plan to be social, yeah. which is not something that's very prevalent in Chicago or New York. Or I don't know any, but where I'm from, you know? And yeah, I just underestimated how a move would affect me mm-hmm. and getting used to a new home, right? So I very much did not hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And then me and my now fiance were in the midst of a breakup at the time. And I was just like, well,
wait, she was from Chicago?
Yeah, we moved here together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
that's a partnership for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was the first time we ever lived together was moving here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a very big change for us.
I've definitely heard some different ways that could go.
Yeah. So the fact that you guys are engaged
now. Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not easy, for sure. For some. I mean, maybe it's easy for others, and kudos to those people. But I don't know. We were in the midst of a breakup, and I was just like, all right, I don't have many friends. I don't have friends that I can just pick up and, you know, call and be like, let's hang out now. Not really. And I just am not doing anything. Like, I haven't acted in so long. So I don't know what led me to UCB, but like something led me, you know, being it from the theater world and also being from Chicago, which is the mecca of improv, mm-hmm. even though I did not do improv in Chicago, something just said, all right, there's not much theater here. You have some experience in improv, not a lot. You know of it, you know it, you're from Chicago, and you're as comfortable as ever on stage. Take some improv classes. And I did. And I don't know, I still don't know what led me to UCB. Over Second City or IO, which were very big in Chicago. But something did. And it just felt good. It felt right. I mean, within a year, I was on a house team.
Nice.
And then, you know, I started a production company and we were doing a web series called Bitch Please Comedy. Me and two white girls. And you know, I just started to do more shit. I got an agent. And things started to like percolate. But UCB has been very good to me. You know, as much as I hate it and love it, and as many problems as it has.
Right.
And as much as I don't need it anymore, they need me, I don't need them type thing. I'm very much in that aspect of my career. I can't deny that it has been very good to me. I was on a house team within a year. I met great friends. I've gotten my agents and my managers like that. I've gotten my voiceover agent from being on a sketch house team there, which has led me to
nice
a lot of shit. I'm making more money. I made more money in this pandemic than I've made in the past 4 years.
Wow.
Hell yeah.
Cause like nothing will be heard of me until 2021, but I've booked a lot of shit. And it all came from just like you. So like I met my friends there. I met Edgar and Carl there, mm-hmm. which eventually led us to doing a podcast, which got us to Culture Kings, which got us, you know, mm-hmm. at iHeart. And beyond. So, you know, it was weird coming here because I didn't hit the ground running. But once you find something that you're in, it's very easy to really ingrain yourself in it. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, you really don't have anything else to do in LA, yeah. to be honest. You kind of have to immerse yourself in what you want to do here, because otherwise it can be a very lonely city.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to hear that, like, in your case, the dream is that the hustle does pay off, you know, yeah. like mm-hmm. it's maybe a slow burn and you don't know it in the moment and all those years doing shows or whatever. But yeah, I think there is hopefully a domino effect that happens, that one thing leads to another and all of that. So, I mean, I'm really happy for you to be in this place now. Like, it's just certain industries have definitely been able to survive during this year. Mm-hmm. And yeah. the fact that you're able to hack into one is a good, yeah. really good thing. Yeah.
It's been crazy. It's been a crazy year, but that's been one little shining spot of it. And yeah, the podcast game has been great for me and to me, and there's even bigger things coming up, which is really dope. And I don't understand it, but I'm taking it, yeah. you know, I'm going to take it. So
that's great.
And then, you know, just meet really cool people, man. Like that's the one thing that I do like about the podcast game is it has allowed me, and comedy in general, but we all are in like the comedy game
mm-hmm.
for the most part. or in a creative game, you just meet really cool people. It's a haven for people who are social, even though there's a lot of unsocial people doing podcasts.
Yeah. But for a lot of people like that,
now more
than
ever,
this is their opportunity to be social. You know, like this is how they, it's almost like a security blanket. Like it is social because you have to be, or like even I mean, during this pandemic, even like there are weeks have gone by where doing this podcast was the one social activity that I did. So I hear that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, but it's pretty wild. But I'm trying to stop saying it's crazy because, you know.
Yeah, same. Wild has become a word that I've been trying to say instead.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Wild, absurd. It's a good one.
Ooh, absurd.
I'll give you that. Yeah, we'll give you that one.
That shit is bonkers, baby.
Bonkers.
That's what I'm going to start saying. It's bonkers, baby. And I got to make sure to put the baby on it.
That's bonkers, baby. Doesn't sound right with me.
Yeah. It only sounds good when you say it.
Well, that is bonkers, baby.
You got to add a little, like New York to it. That's bonkers, baby. Like
I'm not
going to
do that.
I don't know if I'm allowed to. All right, I want to actually, so you come to LA, you get into UCB, you know, you meet people. How did you imagine your career going? Like, did you want to be like a comedian, or were you like, I want to be like a movie actor. I just want to do it all. Like, what were you envisioning?
No, I didn't want to be a comedian. It's very weird to me still that I have to, that I have the comedian tag behind my name.
Yeah, yeah.
And not because I feel like an imposter. I don't. By all stretches of the imagination, I'm a professional comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I've paid to be one. You know?
Yeah.
I know how comedy works, and I know how to comedian, essentially. Yes. There's, you know, growing up, all we think of when we think of professional comedian is stand up, but you know, that's much different. But you know, the one thing that I am disappointed about, a thing that I held with the pride of, or badge of honor, I should say, is that I can do anything. You know, I was doing musicals, which I started to do here, but you know, I've done Shakespeare. I've done, like, you know, the bad thing about our circle is that when you are in this circle that we're all in, comedian becomes a typecast almost.
Like you're pigeonholed.
It feels like you can be pigeonholed, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just like, nah, man, I'm an actor. Mm-hmm. I've always been an actor. I will never not consider myself an actor. And not just somebody who can do comedy. Like I can do, you know, I grew up doing dramatic stage work, you know?
Yeah.
So it is a weird thing to have the comedian tag, or because that's not what I envisioned. That's not what I necessarily thought I would be. But the one thing LA has taught me is one door opens for you to be able to walk through the rest of them, right? So if this
that's
is the
very
door
wise
that
thing you just said.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it has to. You can't walk through the rest of the doors unless the first door opens, right? So if this is that was the first door that I had to walk through to kickstart my LA career, because that was another culture shock, was the starting over process in LA.
Right.
Like I said, I was doing fine in Chicago. And I naively and ignorantly thought that, man, I'll just pick it up. And I very much had to start over.
Mm-hmm.
Even though people was like, yeah, bro, you're going to have to start over. I was like, nah, nah.
Yeah,
I'm
not
good.
Not me. Yeah, yeah.
Nah, yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. I had to as well. So, you know, I'll gladly accept it. I have no problem with anybody saying that to me. But I do always look at myself as a more complete, rounded entertainer than I've been able to show so far
on
a wild scale.
That's more common. I mean, like, I always think of, like, shit, the, oh my God, how did I forget his name? The guy from Breaking Bad, the main character. Oh my God.
Yeah. Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston. Yeah. I think there's almost some like prestige from going from being like, I'm known for comedy, but I also can do drama. Like, you know, people were shook to their cores when Bryan Cranston, like, literally, like, being like, whoa, 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 out of Malcolm in the Middle to, like, serious protagonist, or I guess
White.
Antagonist in a TV
Anti-hero
show.
Kind of thing, yeah.
Like, people love I mean, like that, I don't know. People love that shit when they're like, but he's a funny guy. Oh my God. Yeah. Or like, even like Jim Carrey's a tougher analogy, but like, it's.
No, yeah. Truman Show is my favorite movie, honestly. Yeah. Eternal Sunshine, he's the same.
Yeah.
Eternal Sunshine, you know? Kills me. Yeah.
It's great. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful. Yeah. But, you know, I think that's why, you know, the one thing, especially why I don't ever get offended if somebody just throws a comedian tag on me, is because I know that comedy is actually much harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you are a good comedian actor, you're a good fucking actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The outside world views comedy with kind of, you know, a turned nose. But it's a reason why most comedian, quote unquote, comedian actors, when they take that first turn into the dramatic, is always like, oh,
yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
So-and-so going for that Oscar now. Like, yeah. No, the motherfucker can just act. Yeah. Yeah. You just act, you know, and can act well.
Point. Yeah.
Because here's the thing with comedy, it's all about timing.
Mm-hmm.
That is the number one thing with comedy, is timing. If you can master timing, you can do anything Truly, you can do fucking anything. And then the nuances of dramatic acting or dramatic work can be strengthened up and things like that. But it's a reason why the Will Smiths, the Jim Carreys, the Bryan Cranstons, Adam Sandlers, you know, like a lot of these people who I just named all men actors, I apologize. but a lot of these people who we came to know them as like comedy people, when they take those turns into drama, it's just like, oh shit, this motherfucker is good. You know, it's because, you know, timing, it's everything.
That's a really good point. Let's take one last break. We'll be right back with some more Chiquise Neal. And we're back. I feel like Culture Kings, you guys have done the podcast for a long ass time.
It feels like it. It started, Anna knows this, started as Against the Grain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was 2017. So technically it's only been, you know, it's changed a few times. It's changed names. It's changed networks. The show has evolved.
Yeah, yeah.
In such a big way and such a strong way.
I guess it's almost the same age as our show then. I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why I thought it was like a year older than ours, but.
Well, the reason being is because for a while we were doing 3 episodes a week, which was fucking brutal.
That is wild. I was going to say it brutal. Again. That's wild.
Yeah, yeah. So, while we've only been a show for, you know, like Culture King started in January of 2018. And so 18, 19, 20. So 3 seasons. 3 years, we have over 250 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like we've been around for much, much longer because we have a huge library of shows.
Yeah.
We have a huge backlog or catalog. Yeah, no, Culture Kings has been good. Culture Kings has been good to me.
I mean, I wanted to bring up the fact that you had like a kind of a wedding on the podcast of sorts. Can you explain that?
Okay, so it was a bit. It was definitely a bit.
But from my perspective, a lot of people thought it was real. Loves podcasting.
Yes, a lot of people thought it was real. The wedding of Chiquise Neal.
Yes.
you know, it's fun. Here's one thing that I really appreciate with Culture Kings is in the midst of that time when we were doing 3 episodes a week.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a show like the Daily Zeitgeist, for instance, where you actually have shit to talk about every day because you're talking about the news. Me and Edgar are two creative people. He's a writer. I'm a performer. We were doing 3 episodes a week. And so we got bored really fucking quick. So it forced us to say, we need to do something or else we're going to, like, we hate this. So we have to do something. So what it forced us to do was it forced us to start taking like really wild swings with different type of episodes, which was really fun for us. Like it really like loosened us up and really like, you know, I kudos to the team at How Stuff Works and iHeart for giving us the freedom to do that because it really allowed us to really spread our wings and try different things. So because of that, even though like we've kind of gone away from that, every once in a while we can still pull a bit like that out of our asses. And that's what the wedding was. It was presented as like it was a real wedding and things like that, but it was a bit. I got left at the altar.
Yikes.
And yes, but it was fun. But yeah, we have fun little episodes like that every once in a while. So I really appreciate the show for that reason.
What made you want to do it that way, to have you be left at the altar?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was the first episode that Jessica ever was on. So, like, uh-huh. You know, the elusive Jess was actually on that episode.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you haven't made her up this whole time. Like, she's yes, a real person.
Right. She's a real person. I don't know. Once we figured out that's what the bit was, from the beginning, it was like, I'm getting left at the altar. Because what the alternative is, pretend like I actually got married. That's and true. Then... Yeah. People like, yeah, then it was like, then people really, but like, did you get married for real? Yeah. So like, that was going to be the end no matter what. And like, and figuring out like how we get there and the reason that we get there was what we had to figure out, but, or outlined, you know, cause we just kind of did an outline and then we improvised it mostly cause me and Edgar are both improvisers. So we were able to do that. And we're both very creative people. So we had an outline and we were able to do it in a really fun way. But yeah, it was going to end in one of us leaving each other at the altar. And I felt like it was a little more digestible if I got left at the altar. Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. So that was the play. But it was a fun little 35-minute episode.
Yeah.
I dig it. I got to go back and listen to that one. I saw it in my feed, but I don't, you know, I'm at that point where I just can't listen to podcasts anymore. Oh,
I don't listen to podcasts anymore.
I always see things like, oh, I really should listen to that. Then I'm like, do I really have the mental capacity anymore?
Nah. I don't. And look, kudos to people who do podcasts and still listen to them. You know, I love them, man. Kudos to them. But I just can't.
Yeah, I can't feel you on that. It's really hard for me to listen to podcasts. But I feel bad because we need people to listen to podcasts on our end.
That's true.
So it's like.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people expect podcasters not to listen to podcasts, though. I think the audience knows like that's likely the case. Like they're not out here listening to show. And you know, I mean, maybe some people are. I don't know. Paul F. Tompkins does. He listens to shows, you know. But Paul F. Tompkins is like a unicorn. So
he can do it all.
You know, he can do it all. He's a special guy.
Well, it's tough for me because I like work in podcast. I'm like always around podcasts and like I have to listen to shows before they go up. So it's like I am technically listening to a lot of podcasts, but I don't listen to podcasts for like pure joy anymore. Like it's just like I can't.
Yeah.
I also am like, oh, great, another person with an opinion. Like I'm like dead inside. Yeah. Like nothing.
Yeah.
Real. Like no one's podcast brings me joy anymore. Like it's hard for me to like. Want to listen to someone talk and be like, oh, sounds like you're having fun, huh?
Yeah. You know, it's weird though. It's weird, you know, thinking about that though. Like, we were talking about, like, Ethnic, your show, Ethnically Ambiguous, has been a show for over 3 years.
Did you forget the name,
Jickies? No, I just was going to mispronounce Ethnically.
Okay, I'm kidding.
That's what it was. Is what we really are.
I'm kidding. And Culture Kings and all these shows, a lot of, you know, the podcast game has boomed in the past 3 years, right?
Yeah.
Where a lot of people who even we came up with, like thinking like a Lacey Mosley, like now she's fresh off of Conan O'Brien appearance based on her podcast. You know, so the podcast game has boomed, especially in our circle. But the podcast game boom has all happened under Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think about this until like a day or two ago, and it was just like, I really wonder what the next 4 years are going to be like, where, you know, and regardless of what you think of Biden, and it's all fair game, I don't want to talk about it, but like, I can venture to say it's probably not going to be as dauntingly depressing as it has been in the past 4 years. So I wonder, like, with a little bit more lightness to a lot of people, what the next era of podcasting is going to be. Because, like, you know, even Culture Kings, you know, or your guys' show came from a need of the society realizing there's too many white people doing this shit. Yeah. You know, like that, it came from that need, right? And I wonder what the next era is going to be.
I mean, I don't think podcasts are going anywhere, honestly. I think
they're not going anywhere. If anything, they're going to get bigger.
Yeah. But you did bring up an interesting. I don't think Trump. I think maybe Trump was a little part of it, like because people were like reaching for connection, maybe. But I think it was just like a natural progression of technology. Honestly, I think
that's true.
I think, especially if you live in a city with a commute or whatever, where you can't like watch something, you listen to something. And
yeah,
I think in our case, especially, people feel like they like, and probably in yours too, people feel like they're like hanging out with a friend every week. You know, it's just like they're used to hearing people's voices every week, and I don't know. It's incredible the reach that podcasting has. I'm amazed by it every time I really think about it. Like, we have listeners all around the world that know so much about us, and for some reason keep coming back. You know what I mean? So it's humbling, and it is a really fascinating industry, and I'm really grateful for it in a lot of ways. But
I am curious, because there was a boom in the pandemic more than ever, because everyone's like, well, shit, I better start a podcast. But like, and especially within celebrities who are like, oh, recap my TV show I was on or whatever the hell. That like, I'm curious so what will
that
happen.
Shade, is that shade to scrubs? Yeah. That shade to scrubs?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's a lot. It's a lot more. Like, so many.
No, I know.
Shows.
It's so many. Yeah. It's but so
like,
many.
I mean, so many celebrities have gotten into the game. It's a little bit.
Right. So I'm curious, like, when they have, like, can go back to doing what celebrities do, like filming whatever their thing. Like, I'm curious what, like, if there'll be like.
How many will still keep it up?
Yeah. Like, it'll just be like, that was the trend of the time was to have a podcast, which I will say now, you know what you should. Do, which is I'm all about it, is listen to books on Audible. That's like all I do now is just listen to books instead of listening to podcasts. I'm still listening, but I've changed my
it's more
change
productive
your content
book, you know. It's more productive. You're like reading,
and I'm listening to all these celebrity memoirs. I'm being like, oh my, like now literally a friend texts me like, Mariah Carey's crazy. I was like, well, the thing you don't understand about Mariah Carey is that she's actually gone through a lot in life, so it's very minimizing for you to say that she's just crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on.
Also, use wild instead. Yeah. Jacquees, this has been a lovely time. You're going to have to come back.
Yeah, you got to come back.
For real anytime. This time. Because when Anna told me that we should have you on the show, I was like, we should have like a repeat. Like, I thought you were going to be a repeat guest because I'm a dumbass. But you should be a repeat guest for real. And for those of you that somehow live under a rock and don't know who you are, can you tell everybody where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah. At Jacquees Neal on every piece of social media. Check out Culture Kings while you can. There may be some changes coming up soon. We'll see. Look out for that. I have a new show coming out on HeadGum pretty soon.
Oh, you do? What's it called?
The title is still in working order.
Okay. Sorry. So I thought you said it and then I interrupted.
It's a reality TV show podcast.
Ooh.
So, yes, look out for that. Also, maybe another podcast I'm hosting that is I can't really speak about, but it'll be a big one. So I'm gonna stay in these streets, y'all. I'm staying in these streets. I'm doing a lot of shit. So at Jacquees Neal is the easiest way to find me.
And nice. You were hosting a challenge show, weren't you?
I am, and me and the whole co-host of that were approached by HeadGum to host
to
a new me and Ray Sani. Yeah, so we're going to be hosting a show that is about reality TV and my ignorance of it and her experience and knowledge of it.
Nice. Damn, you took me and Anna's fucking shtick. I know nothing about reality TV, and Anna knows everything. So
damn,
that goes,
I watch a lot.
Sorry, Shireen.
Okay. We don't do that at all. We don't talk about it. I bring it up, and you're like, I don't want to talk about this, and I'm like, okay.
True.
But yes, we do. I did have a podcast about the challenge called The Deliberation. I don't know if it's gonna come back because the challenge starts in December.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I have the time to devote to that as well as the other shows that I'm doing. So I sadly don't know if The Deliberation is coming back, but me and Ray are coming back as a duo. So, you know, you'll get that. Yeah.
Well, everyone, look forward to that. You're doing so much. So please follow Jacquees Neal on the socials. And until next time.
Thank you guys for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being on our show. You're a delight.
Thank you for taking the time. Considering I was late, baby. Classic Anna style. Never on time.
You gave me a chance to, you know, take a little extra, like, 10, 15 minute nap. So I appreciate
you. Nice. Oh, thank God.
You're welcome, really.
Oh, thank God.
Thank you. Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Everybody, check out Jaquise. And until next time, listen to Culture Kings, you know?
Stay cultured.
Yeah. Mm. Bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.